Can we please have the recording started?
Recordings are started.
Thank you very much. Welcome everyone to this CCWG on accountability meeting number 77 on Thursday, January the 14th, 2016, 6 UTC. I remind you to please say your name before speaking for transcript purposes. And if there is anyone missing their statement of interest, we remind you to please kindly fill in your statement of interest. If you have any problems logging into the wiki or you need a wiki account, staff will be happy to assist you creating an account for the wiki for you to log in. The roll call will be, as usual, taking into account those who are in the Adobe Connect room, but I would also like to call for anyone that is not in the Adobe Connect room at this point and is in the audio bridge to please state your name so we can add you to the roll call. Is there anyone in the phone bridge that is not in the Adobe Connect room at this stage?
Jordan Carter is here. Yep.
Thank you, Jordan. Anyone else? Okay, so the only person in the phone bridge so far is Jordan Carter, and it's being added to the roll call. And I will now like to turn to my coacher, Matthew Vale, for our first topic and next agenda item. Matthew?
Thank you very much, Leon. This is Matthew Vale, the CCNSO appointed co-chair. Sorry, I have a little more background noise than usual. I hope you're hearing me okay. Our agenda item number two is a second reading regarding the inspection rights recommendation. The draft conclusions have been circulated to the list after first reading. They were about limiting the scope and clarifying the scope of the inspection rights, clarifying the difference between DIDP and inspection rights, and introducing an additional category or suggestion which was suggested by the ICANN board, which we named investigation rights, so the right to trigger an audit, and the direction that abusive inspection right claims would be waived or appropriately mitigated was also confirmed. There has been no specific comment to these conclusions on the mailing list, and I don't know if we have Bruce or any board member online who could provide some feedback on these additions. I see Rinalia's hand is up. So to start this discussion, it would be obviously very interesting to hear, Rinalia, whether that's addressing the board's concern. Thank you. Rinalia? We cannot hear you at this point, at least. Or is it my phone line?
Can you hear me now?
Rinalia? Yes, now I can hear you, Rinalia. Welcome, and thank you for joining.
Okay, thank you. So the board, I would like to convey a response from the board regarding the conclusions circulated after the first reading, the red line component. The board fully appreciates the work by the community in addressing the public comments in the third draft proposal. On inspection rights, the board has the following reaction and input on the red line points. First, the board agrees with an inspection right that is limited to accounting books and records. The board also agrees that the inspection right can be invoked by a single SO or AC. We believe that the inspection right should be a community right and not a right reserved to the sole designator. The sole designator can be used to enforce the community's right of inspection through the escalation process if ICANN errs in its response. When a single SO or AC can invoke the inspection right, we believe that demand can and should go direct to ICANN. Requiring that demand to go through a community process to direct the sole designator is an added complexity and to our mind is not necessary. Moreover, giving the sole designator a right of inspection as opposed to making it a right held by the community represents a significant and inappropriate change to the sole designator, and we've explained this in our response to the public comments on the third draft proposal. We have some text proposal to paragraphs 20 and 21, and I would like to paste this into the chat and then read it out loud for you so that it goes on the record. For paragraph 20, what we propose in terms of changes, it would read, and the tweaks are quite minor. The CCWG accountability recommends including in the ICANN bylaws the right for SOs or ACs to inspect as outlined in California Corporations Code 6333, although this specific article reference would not be mentioned in the bylaws. For paragraph 21, this inspection right is distinct from the Document Information Disclosure Policy, DIDP. While any eligible party can file a request according to the DIDP, inspection rights are only accessible to SOs or ACs. The scopes are also different, as explained below. Unlike the exercise of the other community powers, which require community engagement and escalation before initiating a request for action by the EC, the CCWG accountability recommends that a petition for inspection be brought directly by a single SO/AC or by multiple SO/ACs making a written demand on ICANN for the requested materials. If the board refused or ignored the request, the petitioning SO/ACs could then initiate an escalating community decision-making process to enforce the demand on the board requiring community consensus. There are two additional comments and response from the board on investigation rights. The board agrees with the inclusion of an investigation right and notes that the language proposed in red line reflects the board comments. And finally, on DIDP, the board reaffirms its commitment to addressing improvements to the DIDP in Workstream 2 and thanks the CCWG for the clarification in the document on the differences between the inspection right and the DIDP. That's all I have on that, Matthew.
Thank you very much, Reynalia, for a very clear and a detailed consideration from the whole board on short notice, because obviously it was only a week ago. So I really want to stress this because the board is really highly engaged in providing quality feedback in short notice on this. I would like to. So my summary is that we're well in line. There might be some minor tweaks, but they did not seem to me to be raising substantial issues. But I would like to check with the full group whether we can confirm that we are moving forward in that direction once we've heard this board confirmation, which I expect will be circulated also on the list, so that we make sure we got the tweaks properly. Anyone has any question for Inalia or can we consider this moved forward? I have Brett. Brett, go ahead.
Thank you. Is everybody can hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. I'm a little bit confused. I understand that DIDP policy itself is going to be further discussed in Workstream 2. But what doesn't seem to be addressed here, or at least it doesn't seem clear to me, is that there will be an independent appeals process for DIDP decisions expanded and or clarified and implemented here in Workstream 1. Is that, in fact, the case? or am I misunderstanding this draft here, which seems rather vague on the issue and on the board's comments, which seem to take the issue entirely to Workstream 2? Thank you.
Thank you, Brett. So I would like to mention that the DIDP comment from the board on this aspect was because we reintroduced and stressed the difference between inspection rights and DIDP, but DIDP is not on the agenda, if you will, of recommendation one. That's the discussion that we had on Tuesday when discussing the scope of the IRP. So I think this question was raised, whether there should be an appeal mechanism as part of the Workstream 1 discussion on Thursday, and we'll reconvene this discussion next Thursday. So I don't think Renalia necessarily have to answer that. It's a well-noted question, Brett, but it's not recommendation 1 related at this point. And I hope you can accommodate and this patience while we discuss this.
Okay, I'm sorry. When are we going to discuss it? I only raised the issue now because it was raised by the comment from the board, right? And just right now.
Yeah, the comment from the board said was reaction to the fact that we reaffirmed in this recommendation that DIDP is not the same as inspection right. And the discussion we had on Tuesday was whether the appeals mechanism for DIDP should be part of Workstream 1. There were several options. So it's going to be rediscussed in second reading next Tuesday when we go for this recommendation 7 agenda item. I know we are going through all the recommendations one by one and some of the topics. It's sometimes confusing even for people like me who get involved in that a lot. It's perfectly understandable, Brett, that there's some confusion.
Okay. Thank you. I just want to make sure it did not slip through. Thanks. Bye.
No, it did not slip. And if there's no further question, I think we can consider this item agreed on for and the concern raised. So we're approving that moving forward. And we note that we are not totally through recommendation 1 because there's still the outstanding item about decisional participants. But we discussed that we would wait until we get formal GAC input to rediscuss this. But it's a nice step forward for the group to think that the inspection rights are moving forward. I see Bruno, hand is up. Bruno? No, it was probably an old hand or an AC glitch. So with that, I am now turning to my co-chair, Thomas, for recommendation 12 and agenda item 3.
Thanks very much, Mathieu, and hello, everyone. This is Thomas Rickert speaking. We're now going to do the second reading on recommendation number 12, which is dealing with the escalation timeframe. And there has been an updated document that's been sent to the list. There was also some communication by email on the list. And I would suggest that, sorry, I misspoke. It's recommendation 2, in fact, and not 12. I apologize. And I would like to ask Jordan, the rapporteur responsible for this area of our report, to maybe recap and take the discussion further. Jordan?
Thank you, Thomas. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you all right.
Great, thank you. Hi, everyone. It's Jordan here, Dolan Zeds, and one of the rapporteurs for Work Party 1. Look, what I did with the document that was circulated on the list, and I apologize for not doing the appropriate subject line, was to take the discussion around timeframes and essentially to look at what we agreed on the call last week to get rid of the conference call step and to lengthen the timeframes involved for SOs and ACs to make a decision by a week. So the logic was all set out in the email that I circulated to you with a few typos that people have picked up, so thank you for the feedback on that. The essential point is that once a petition is lodged within 21 days of a decision that could trigger a power being raised, that the next item or the next event would be the community forum rather than the conference call. And what that implies is that you have to have a higher than one SOAC threshold, if you like, to do the petition. And so the logic for that is set out in some detail in the document that is in front of us. You can see the deletions on the third page of the document around the conference call in the summary. And then there are some track changes both from me and from the staff that are shown starting on page 7 of the PDF that's in front of you. The petitioning phase would require two SOs and ACs to agree with three for the recall of the entire ICANN board, acknowledging that as an extraordinary power. And within that 21 days, there would then be another 7 days after a petition was lodged for a second SO or AC to join, or in the case of removing the board, a third one. We skip over the former step around a conference call on the understanding, as we discussed last week, that there would be informal discussions going on between SOs and ACs anyway. The rationale for giving some additional time for a written reasoning for the use of the power, step 3 on page 7 of the PDF, is simply to give the – it's a mimicking of the content that was already there, as I understand it, and to give a little bit more time once the relevant SOs and ACs have both come on board the petition for them to exchange views around why they would want the power to be used. And after that point, the process is the same, as had been set out in our previous report. The main difference is a slight extension to the timeframes. So if you are scrolling down to what is now step 4 at the bottom of page 8, top of page 9, the community forum would be held within 21 days or 3 weeks of the petition being lodged, and that is a little bit longer. We had allowed in the previous version of the report, the third draft, for there to be a deferral of a discussion until the next face-to-face ICANN meeting. And that remains here, except for the budget. And I just want to draw your attention to that. It doesn't seem reasonable to me that if there was a petition raised about the budget within 20 days of it being finalized by the ICANN board, if there's a community complaint with that that's been raised in the consultation process and then is raised directly, I don't think we can have a situation where a decision around a veto or not is delayed by a month or two or three until the next face-to-face ICANN meeting. The organization needs a viable budget in place. So I've proposed an exception to that on page 9 of this document. After the community forum, there's a 21-day period proposed for the SOs and ACs to make their decision. So essentially what we're talking about is a elimination of one step, the conference call step, recognizing it'll happen informally, and the slight extension of the time between the petition and the forum and the decision from 2 weeks to 3 weeks. That's what I've tried to do here. A couple of you have caught typos and stuff. That's helpful feedback. I haven't had time to circulate an updated document. But Thomas, I think I'd hand over back to you to ask if there's discussion to go with this. I've tried as best I could to reflect the discussion we had last week accurately in the document.
Thanks so much, John, for what I think was an excellent overview of what's happened to the document. And also, I think that the comments and concerns that have been raised have now been welded into this updated proposal. Let's double check with the group whether there are any remaining concerns or questions with this item. So there is a comment from David in the chat, and in order to be able to have a discussion on that, let me just read it out for you. Good progress at Jordan on escalation timelines. Just a few remaining concerns. One, the community forum format allows for a second or third session if needed, because the community forum is the best chance to amicably resolve an issue that makes sense, but won't these added sessions need an extension as appropriate, as 21 days may be inadequate? Jordan, I suggest we take those one by one. Would you like to comment on this first question before we move to the second one?
Yeah, I can do that. Our report said that the community forum might take 1 or 2 days. Now, you know, I like talking as much as the rest of you do, a little bit less than some of you, I have to say, in an affectionate way. And I cannot imagine a community forum taking 1 or 2 days. What I can imagine with that language around subsequent sessions is there being a community forum that has a start, say, this randomly, say, 06 hours UTC, and then has a session at 14 hours UTC, and then has a session at 21 hours UTC, to give a global coverage. And that's what I thought was meant by these multiple sessions. The idea that any of these powers is so significant that you would hold a community forum and then a couple of days later a second session, and then a couple of days later a third session, seems, to be honest, to me unlikely. The question really is, should we provide additional time for that? The way I would read that in terms of the drafting, David, and I know you're not on the call, the sessions may be, we've set a deadline by which the start of the community forum has to be held within 21 days. And we've set a deadline for when the decision has to be made after the community forum is finished of 21 days. We haven't specifically said the community forum itself must only take 1 or 2 days. It may be helpful to bound that and say that sessions of the community forum have to be held within the course of a week or something. That would give flexibility for the meeting to happen on a number of days, if you like. I confess it's something I hadn't thought about very carefully. But 21 days isn't the duration, if you like. I hope that helps.
Thanks, Jordan. Let's move to the second and third question from David before looking at the other questions and comments that have been made. Suggest step six gets 3 days, not one. There may be communication issues or human error.
Responding to that, I think that that's put there to be clear that the board will be advised. To be honest with you, I would be very surprised if, you know, the act of recording the decision of the SOs and ACs is going to be a public one. And if board members are not paying attention to that on the receipt of these accountability powers, I'd be surprised. So in substance, people will know. In terms of procedure, I wouldn't be in favor of having a one-day deadline in the bylaws. My reading of the step is that it's designed to signify that as soon as possible, the board will be formally advised. So we should make sure in the implementation that this doesn't create a kind of problem. And if you're not speaking, could you please mute your microphone?
Thanks, Jordan. Third item brought up by David then is, could the days specified be limited to weekdays? Remember that holidays vary widely across the globe, and August is virtually work-free almost everywhere.
So on this point, I don't agree with David. The numbers pretty clearly relate to calendar weeks, and the intention is not that there would be business days. So 21 days isn't meant to be 21 business days. It's meant to be 21 days, 3 weeks. If we start allowing for holidays and the fact that there's seasonalities, if we want to extend the timeframes, let's have that discussion. But in this document, these are days of the week. They're literal days. 21 days is 3 weeks. 7 days is 1 week.
Thanks, John. I think this has been very helpful. The if I may suggest so, before moving to the queue and to the other comments that have been made, I suggest that we stick to the notion of weeks, that in order to keep things simple and straightforward, that we don't make a distinction between calendar days, work days, and holidays, or what have you. I think the point that's been brought up with respect to the community forum being on a day or multiple days and such, I think what we might wish to consider is clarifying that first there is the encouragement, if not demand, to socialize all the information required to the pertinent to the community power before the community forum is held. This goes back to a request that was reiterated by Alan during last week's call. So we have removed the mandatory call, but certainly all the documents and information need to be floated around in the community to allow for a discussion. I think the latest at this point, the community will learn about the complexity of the issue, and it will then plan accordingly whether it is likely that they can discuss this and resolve the issues or at least agree on a way forward in one day, or whether multiple sessions on one day or on different days are required. I think we are not well advised to be too prescriptive on this, but shouldn't we leave the process as outlined in the document as the general rule and allow for some flexibility should the community need it on a specific case? Also, with respect to the point that's been brought up by Arti regarding the termination of the process, i.e. when a resolution has been found, I think we shouldn't be too prescriptive on that as well, because there might be different arrangements that are reached between either the community or the community and the board on the way forward. So I think should the issue not be tackled to the satisfaction of a sufficient number of component parts of the community, then we will have sufficient traction to move on in the escalation path. So I think it's not necessarily required to be prescriptive on the format that a resolution needs to take at that point. So I hope that we've covered the points that have been mentioned in the chat so far. So let's move to the queue now. And should you have raised your hand to support the notion of adding a little bit of flexibility to the process, then I think we should you should consider to maybe lowering your hand, because I guess that's the point that we can add in the note as a to-do. Alan.
Thank you. 2 points. I think if I heard you correctly, you said we should stick with the concept of weeks. Did I get that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. I would actually suggest that we talk about calendar days. As people noted in the chat, in some people's minds, if you say a week, then it is a week from Sunday through Monday, from Monday through Sunday, or whatever it is. Whereas I think when we're talking about weeks, we're talking about 7-day periods from the event that triggers it.
Okay, Alan, Jordan's just confirming that he's happy to go with natural days, so let's just move to days and not make a distinction between work and
days. That's fine. All I'm saying is let's make sure that whatever term we use is not eligible for good confusion. The point I raised my hand for, however, is on the first is in Jordan's answer to the first comment. And that is particularly, is the community forum a multi-session? Is it multi-day? The words we use are, and this is in paragraph 15 of the document, it talks about that the community forum is the opportunity to resolve the differences between the community and the board. We know the board cannot make decisions on the fly in the middle of a public meeting. So if there is indeed any opportunity for resolution of issues during a public forum, there are going to have to be multiple sessions with an opportunity for the board and perhaps the community to meet in private and discuss where we are and decide what the next step is. So I think it is virtually inevitable that it will be multiple session and perhaps over a multiple day period if we're going to use this as an opportunity to perhaps resolve a problem as opposed to simply exercising the rights. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Jorge?
Hello. Good morning. Do you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, thank you. And this is Jorge Cancio, Switzerland, for the record. I just wanted to chime in on this question of the escalation and the time frame being also an issue for some GAC members. And I would like to understand a little bit the how this reduction of faces is affecting the whole process. So the first specific question would be how many days did the process have before the changes at the maximum, for instance, and how many days would it have with the changes proposed by Jordan? A first impression, although I'll wait for the answer to that question, is that we might be collapsing too much, and the conference call was there for a reason, and jumping directly to the community forum has to be treated with care. As to the community forum, I just wanted to comment also on something that Jordan mentioned, and this is the meaning of subsequent sessions. That was included in the discussions we had before and after and in Dublin, and session doesn't mean to have conference calls on the same day or meetings on the same day. I'm quite sure about that because I was in the drafting team, and the idea, as is reflected in the summary, is to allow for further deliberation. Further deliberation, and this is also connected with what I think Alan said, implies that, for instance, there might be a discussion. And if in that discussion the board or some SO or some AC comes up with new reasonings or new solutions for resolving the problem, we have to go back to our SO and AC and discuss how we can react to that proposal or to that new reasoning. So a further session, if it's needed, in the community forum is very unlikely to take place on the same day, because we need more time to discuss in the SOs and AC in order to allow for meaningful deliberation. So if we connect that also, that we are suppressing the first conference call, I fear that we are diminishing the element of deliberation and interaction within the escalation process. So I would urge colleagues to treat this with a lot of care, and in any case, not to interpret that forum might be held on the same day. So those would be my inputs, and I would wait for the answer to the question on the maximum days of the process I mentioned at the top of my intervention. Thank you.
Thanks, Jorge. Jordan, are you comfortable with giving an answer to this first question, or would you need to dig into the archives?
Well, just an initial thought in response, if that's helpful. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah, thanks. When you're talking through the phone, you don't get a movement on your mic on the Adobe Room, so you don't know if you're actually talking or not. Okay, those are good points. Thank you for raising them. I think one of the issues is that in the previous process, there were a couple of steps that only allowed for a week. So we were kind of rushing, if you like, SOs and ACs more than we would be under this proposed process. And you can see that on page 8 of the PDF. There would have to have been a conference call within 7 days to make the initial discussion. And then after 7 days after that call, there would have had to be a decision about whether to hold a community forum. So by deleting those two steps, and by lengthening the period to hold the community forum to 21 days after the petition from 15, you're only saving a week, but you're saving 2 decision points. So you're making it much easier for SOs and ACs to interact with the system, and you're not asking them to make a decision within a week. And in the chat, I suggested that we should give a kind of time frame within which sessions of a community forum on the use of the power could happen. We hadn't specified that. I don't think it needs to be within a day. I've suggested within a week. So that would give some time for discussions to happen. And also, I'd urge us all to remember that what we're talking about in the report and in the rules is the formal structure around which these decisions are made. And around this formal structure, there, of course, are going to be informal conversations going on. SOs and ACs aware of the issue, aware that the use of a community power has been petitioned for, and so on. So I think that we've built in enough with the informal and formal things to deal with the issues that you've raised, Jorge. You may take a different view, but I don't think that this hasn't been trying just to save time. It's been trying to reduce the number of steps so that SOs and ACs are less rushed into making decisions. I haven't done the maths, as I did in my email, about the number of steps and the number of days altogether, but I would be surprised if this was much shorter. What we've got to juggle here is the need for community dialogue and discussion on these things with a workable length to exercise any of the powers. If we want to take 3 or 4 months to exercise any of the powers, then we can include all of the previously proposed steps with realistic deadlines. If we want realistic deadlines and an acceptable period for the powers to be exercised, we have to reduce some of the steps in the formal rules. And so my view is that what we've got in this draft in front of us is an acceptable compromise between the number of steps and the length of time that is allowed in the rules for each of them to be exercised. These are always going to be matters of debate and discussion. I suspect that everyone would like more time. I don't know if everyone would like more discourse and dialogue, but what we have here is a need for discussions between SOs and ACs to petition for a power, written rationales being presented, a community discussion at a community forum, and then another almost month for SOs and ACs to make a decision. So we're really only reducing by one the number of formal discussion steps. I don't think in substance we'll be reducing the amount of dialogue, and I don't think in substance we'll be making this problematic.
Thanks, Jordan. I think we need to bring this discussion to an end soon, so I'd like to close the queue after Bruno. Just before we move to Alan, I sort of take issue with the word, Jorge, that you've been using. You said that the initial call is oppressed, and I think that sounds way too negative. It's not like we're trying to make this process unworkable, but as Jordan rightfully pointed out, we're trying to streamline it and make it better workable for everyone. And again, there is a consultation taking place prior to the community forum being held. That is a requirement also going into the documentation. So you can expect that there are discussions, that the community forum is well prepared, and that at that point the community will know how much time are needed, how many sessions are going to be needed in order to be able to resolve the issue or to agree on a way forward. So let's move to Alan and then Bruno.
Thank you. I have one comment and one question. The comment is I'm not as worried as Jorge is on the new proposal. I haven't read it carefully and thought it through, so I'm not sure I'm comfortable with all the details, but overall I am relatively comfortable. The reason I am is the original conference calls and the decisions to support going to the community forum out of the conference calls, there's always been a tone that said, if I support going to a community forum, that doesn't mean I support using the action. I just support getting to the point where we can talk about it. So it's not clear that there will be heavy deliberations and, you know, decision on how we feel about exercising the power at the conference call level and the decision point associated with that. So I don't have a lot of trouble with making that a rubber stamp, which essentially is what we're saying. And, you know, everyone says, let's get to the point where we're going to have the substantive discussion. So I'm feeling moderately comfortable with the proposal. The question I have is, in the lead into Annex 2, there's points 1, 2, and 3. Is this session just talking about 1, or are we also going to be talking about 2 and 3? The text said escalation timeframes only, so I don't know if we're doing 2 and 3 or not.
I suggest that we continue discussing the first point, and then you can please bring up the remaining points if you wish at the end. Bruno?
Yes, thank you, Mathieu. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Hello. All right, Bruno.
Okay. So I want to share some comments from the board on escalation timeframes. I want to preface this by saying that these were developed prior to the review of deadlines, so they may be to be fine-tuned, but it seems that we are very much aligned. So let me provide these comments. The board will support the community in making reasonable adjustments to the escalation timeframes to support the community's ability to take quick action to exercise its powers while still having the time it needs to socialize the issues appropriately. Where the community believes that some of the tight timeframes might require adjustment by a matter of days or have flexibility to simplify some of the steps when broad community support is clear, these are all areas that the board can support adjusting. As the CCWG works to finalize a revised proposal on this, the board notes that it would not support an extension of the initial petition phase beyond 30 days and urges the timelines to be drafted with efficiency and quick action in mind. On thresholds, the board supports the CCWG modification at paragraph 62. On board removal, the board does not support the change at paragraph 64. The suggestion that where the CCWG had previously identified that four SOs or ACs are required to support the recall of the full board should be minimized to three is not acceptable. Demonstration of full community support for the exercise of this ultimate power is essential, and the board does not support a change to this threshold. The other areas where this reduced threshold is proposed, i.e. blocking budgets, fundamental bylaws changes, do not raise the same concern. A proposed red line of paragraph 4 to address this is the following, and the text I'm going to read out, I understand, has been posted to the list. So the proposed text is the following, quote, the CCWG accountability also recommends that in a situation where use of the community powers of either blocking a budget or approving changes to fundamental bylaws, where only four decisional SOs or SEs participate, and the threshold is set at four in support, these two powers will still be validly exercised if three are in support and no more than one objects. The CCWG accountability came to this decision after considering the extended escalation process now proposed prior to the use of community powers, and to avoid the risk of powers being unusable, parenthesis, especially the risk of making changes to ICANN's fundamental bylaws effectively impossible, close the parenthesis, unquote. I hope this is clear, and again, this text has been posted to the list.
Thanks, Bruno. You've already spoken to a point that's going to be discussed at a later point, but we have your or the board's comment on record, which is good. Let's try to agree on a way forward on the escalation timeframe item first. And my suggestion is that we continue the discussion on the list. I think there's a common understanding that we try to make the process as efficient as possible, that we're trying to put some flexibility into the process to allow for allocating appropriate number of sessions and such. It needs to be ensured that the documentation as well as conversations prior to the community forum are exchanged or held. There's been the suggestion of a webinar on the list, so I suggest that we continue collecting ideas on that, refine this. I think we're all working towards the same goal in making this process as workable as possible, and then let us please conclude this item during the next week. Looking at the time that we've spent on this topic, let us try to discuss the thresholds now. So that adds to the point made by Bruno. So, Alan, I'm not sure whether you wanted to speak to the thresholds as well. If so, I had announced to you that you should speak at the end of this conversation. So you might have the floor if you wish to.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I do wish to speak to it. And I'm going to bring up a brand new issue that I know we're not supposed to be doing here, but I think it's really important. In rereading the section on fundamental bylaws and looking at the suggestion that is being made that we allow the threshold to be lowered to three, I think we have a real problem in what we're proposing. And specifically, if we ever get to the stage where a significant number of the five ACs and SOs that are able to take community action are defunct, inactive, cannot take any action for whatever reason, we will end up with an ICANN with bylaws, important bylaws that cannot be changed. I really think we need to consider an escape hatch
of some sort that if the community doesn't exercise its powers within a two-month period or whatever, that the board can act unilaterally. And I'm not proposing detailed words. I just have a fear that we could end up with an ICANN where the bylaws, the important bylaws, could not be changed because there is not enough of the community that is active and can make a decision to allow them to be changed. So I just want to go on record as saying that, and I think we really need to think about it. Thank you.
Alan, I have a view on that, but I'd like to understand your point better. What would be the fallback position that you would suggest including? You said you don't have detailed words on it, but you might have thoughts on a way out.
I just gave one. Right now, even with the modification that Jordan is going to be proposing, we need three ACs or as three of the five to approve a fundamental bylaw or the Articles of Incorporation change if we go ahead with that change. Otherwise, we cannot change them. If, for whatever reasons, three of the five groups that have the power are not going to be able to exercise it, you know, they're dysfunctional. I don't want to look at disaster scenarios, but if for whatever reason they are unable to, then we have a frozen organization that can't be changed. A potential one, and I haven't thought it through because I just came up with this idea this afternoon, this evening as I was reading the documents, is, you know, if the community forum is called and no one shows up and it's done three times in a row or whatever, then the board can act without the community supporting it. I'm just putting ideas together right now. There needs to be some sort of escape hatch so the board can take action if the community is really close to defunct.
Okay, Alan, on that point, I think we've been discussing about the community going silent and not contributing. We also discussed this in connection with the stress test. I would suggest that we take your point, see whether that is seen as a realistic scenario that we need to protect the organization against. And should there be more traction to that notion, let's bring it up again. But my impression is that
that's fine. I was just airing the thing. I wasn't asking for a discussion on it or a decision on it. I was just raising an issue that struck me today, and I don't think we've ever discussed it.
Okay, thank you so much. Jorge, I think that was an old hand from you. Otherwise, please do scream. Jordan has raised his hand. Jordan.
Thanks, Thomas. I'm happy to either respond to Alan now or still on the list. You tell me what you prefer. I say that I don't agree with his proposed resolution to the problem that he's raised.
My suggestion
this is probably easier.
Whether this gets traction on the list. I have not seen any further support for working on this, nor has Alan asked for a discussion now. So let's see if it gets traction. That is in line with our usual working method. So if Alan is the only one seeing that concern, then we can remain silent on it. If it gets traction, we'll bring it back to the plenary. Is that okay, Jordan?
Fine with me.
Great. Bruno?
Hello, sorry, I was on mute. Fine.
Well, I'm not sure. Did you want to speak to Alan's point? I'm not sure what the fine was not was relating to. I apologize.
No, I didn't want. I wanted to lower my hand and missed it. Sorry.
Okay, thank you. So let me just briefly check how we're doing in terms of time. Okay. We would like to hear feedback from the group whether the current threshold proposal that's in the document is enjoying your support, i.e. the point that only three for funded by three SOACs are required for the fundamental bylaw changes in case, instead of a case-by-case approach to lower thresholds. Any contributions to that point? So it looks like there are no objections to what we have in the document. So with that, I suggest that we close this agenda item, and I'd like to hand over to Leon for the next point.
Thank you very much, Thomas. Our next agenda item is on the budget. We had our first reading two calls ago, and we circulated the amendments that that reflect the conclusions from the first reading. And we have also received on the list feedback from the board as per the proposed amendments to this part of our report. And I would like to ask Bruce if he could provide us with this feedback that has been already been circulated to the list, or Asha. Asha, I see your hand up. Asha, could you please take the floor?
Okay, thank you, Leon. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, good afternoon from Singapore. This is Asha Hemrajani for the record. So thanks, Leon. For the budget, we have two comments that we have circulated earlier. I'll just summarize that really quickly, and then one small point I wanted to add to those two comments. So the first one is relating to paragraph 21. So the board is very supportive of this, of the text that is in paragraph 21, because it addresses our comments and concerns that any process through which part of or whole or entire IANA budget is subject to rejection, it must include the voice of the operational community served by the IANA functions. And this is in addition, we're, you know, very, very much supportive of the fact that the process must ensure stable and continuous delivery of the IANA functions, and that we are properly delivering contractual service levels to the respective operational communities that will be affected. So that's the first point. The second point I wanted to make is regarding the fact that we wanted to make sure, I mean, I think this is just a small oversight, but we just wanted to make sure and remind everyone that where the caretaker budget is concerned, it should be the whole of the caretaker budget that is embedded in the fundamental bylaws. So that's in accordance with what we had, what the board had given in terms of comments earlier on page 10, paragraph 1E in our comments. I'll just paste it here in the chat so that. Okay, I think not all of it came through, but I'll just read parts of it so that it's clear to everyone. So basically, we're saying that not only the IANA caretaker budget, but the whole of the caretaker budget, which means the ICANN caretaker budget, it should be embedded in the fundamental bylaws. So that's the second point. Then the third point, which is not in the text that Bruce had circulated, is a relatively minor point, but I think it's also an oversight, a small oversight, which is in the paragraph between 19 and 20, if staff can scroll, I think everybody has control over that. So if you go to this paragraph between 19 and 20, it says there that the caretaker budget would be enacted, and details regarding the caretaker budget are currently under development. So that's for the IANA functions budget. What I was going to suggest is that perhaps we can have it in line with what we have in paragraph 13, which says that the caretaker budget will be developed during implementation according to the guidelines set out within this detailed recommendation. So instead of currently under development, we just change it so that it matches what we have in paragraph 13. If that's okay with my suggestion is, in addition to the 2 points. Any questions or comments?
Thank you very much, Asha. And I guess that my coach Matthew had a comment on the suggestions made by the board. Matthew?
Thank you very much, Leon. This is Mathieu Veil speaking. It's more than a comment. It's a grateful thank you for the board for the very constructive feedback. Indeed, the points that Asha mentioned are very valid. The caretaker budget considerations should kick in even beyond the IANA budget. It's also for the one-year ICANN budget. So that mistake in the drafting and the board suggestion is welcome, and I think represents the intent from the group. And so I think we could all in favor for approving the suggestions made by the board, and this way ensuring that we have alignment on the budget power, which is a very nice conclusion for a very constructive debate we've had so far on this issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you very much, Matthew. Thank you very much, Tasha. Next on the queue, I have Jordan Carter.
Oh, I can just agree with Matthew. That's been a helpful set of comments. We've got to a good place. I agree with the board's suggestions. Let's go with it.
Excellent. Thank you. So I guess that we are all on the same page, and we are in line with taking on board the board's comments and suggestions. And at this point, I would like to call for any objections to actually accept the feedback from the board and incorporate it to our next document. Okay, so I see no objection, and I would also like to thank the board for these very clear and very substantial comments. It is good that we're making progress, as Keith points in the chat box. And it was scheduled to have a break after these agenda items, but since we are ahead of time, and I guess we all want to finish the call as soon as we can, I would like to turn to the next agenda item, to my co-chair, Matthew, and after that, we can go to the break. So, Matthew.
Thank you very much, Leon. So, this is a first reading item, this time recommendation 3, regarding the fundamental bylaws as opposed to the standard bylaws. The comments that we've received are largely in support. However, there were two specific types of comments that we need to discuss. Number one, there was a request that we clarify that the IANA function review provisions that will be part of the fundamental bylaws only apply to IANA's domain name management function and not to the numbers or protocols and parameters. You will recall that this is a CWG stewardship requirement, and as such, it's the CWG stewardship's limit to be only on the naming function. I don't think this should cause any issue. Second, there was a request for clarification from at least IPC and the BC to clarify the process for the change of articles of associations. We had received in November a specific memo from our lawyers that was strongly suggesting, but it hadn't been put in writing black on white in the document, that the Articles of Association's amendment process be aligned with the fundamental bylaw process that we are proposing. And as a consequence, we would like to also confirm with the group that this is what we would clarify in our report, and that's the second discussion point. So to start with, I'd like to hear whether there's any concern, objections regarding item number one, which is the clarification that IFR provisions only apply to INA's name management function. I don't think this should cause that much concern. Okay. And the second point regarding the request for clarification by IPC and BC about articles of incorporation. And the recommendation by our lawyers to align this with the fundamental bylaw process. Any concerns on this approach? We will have to obviously make sure with the ICANN board that this is something that is agreed on, since it wasn't really clear in the prior version. So if there's no more debate, my conclusion on this item would be that we take that approach as our first reading way forward, and ask the board to confirm whether that's an acceptable way forward before our second reading. And I see that Bruce's hand is up, so that's perfectly appropriate. Bruce, please take the floor.
Yeah, Matthew, this is not a point that we've discussed at a board level, but just speaking personally, that looks consistent. So basically, we're saying that a change to a fundamental bylaw or a change to the Articles of Incorporation requires both a two-thirds vote of the board and support from the community. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, so I don't expect...
Of course. Okay. And I think with that, we can consider this item closed for its first reading and move to next agenda item. And I think I'm handing over back to Thomas.
Yes, wasn't the next agenda item the break?
We can do the break now, or maybe just try and move forward until 8:30.
Okay, let's continue the conversation then. So we're now going to discuss the scope of the community IRP and the separation power topic, which is another aspect of Annex 4. And again, I'd like to hand over to Jordan for some introductory remarks on where we stand with this.
Sorry, I was stuck on mute. It's Jordan here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you all right. We can hear you all right.
I'm only unmuting myself to say that I am not the person who should be talking to you about the community IRP. I'm pretty sure that one's Becky.
I'm so sorry. That's Becky, actually. And Becky, there's no way we could save you. I tried.
I was really hoping that Jordan was going to take this one, and I was going to be
no such luck.
Becky, fire away.
Okay. Hopefully, this will be fairly straightforward. The first issue that we need to go over is the board's suggestion that the community IRP should require a higher threshold for SOs and ACs in support and no more than one objection. The current standard in the proposal is 3 in support and one objection. I think that we did have some discussion on the list about some of the issues with this. In particular, we did have conversations about a variety of coroner cases, for example, implementation of GAC advice and issues relating to that. Do we have any comments from folks about the higher threshold? I'm not seeing any interest in discussing this. Okay, I can just discuss it with myself, I guess. If nobody has thoughts on it, I think that this was part of the carefully thought out threshold allocation that tried to balance the need for support, but also flexibility here to bring bring a claim, and given the fact that IRPs could involve, some parts of the community significantly more than other parts of the community. This seems like the threshold seems like a reasonable proposal to me. Would a member of the board like to articulate its reasons for suggesting why an even higher threshold is appropriate?
I'm happy to comment just generally. I think the comments that we made. So this, Becky, you're talking about the threshold to initiate a community IRP, is that correct?
Correct.
I think one of the things that we were concerned about is that there's protections built in to prevent one part of, three parts of the community ganging up on another part of the community, so specifically dealing with policy recommendations. So if an SO came up with policy recommendations, we felt that, it needed to be a pretty high threshold to initiate an IRP on a topic like that. So that's really where we're suggesting a higher threshold.
So,
the specific text we had is that the board is concerned that there should be protections built in on the potential community bringing challenges against other parts of the community. For example, to challenge board action on policy recommendations arising out of an appropriately run policy development process. The board recommends that in those situations, a higher threshold might be appropriate. So I think if we're just talking about a general community IRP, I don't think there's an issue on the three, but we felt there needed to be a higher threshold in situations where a community IRP is being initiated against a policy recommendation from some part of the community.
Thanks very much, Bruce. And I'd like to encourage others to chime in what their thoughts on this board concern are. I see Mathieu's hand is up. So, Mathieu.
Thank you, Thomas. And this is to actually make a link between A and B here on the discussion points. I think the board's concern that Bruce laid out that part of the community would try and challenge the ability for another part of the community to, for instance, do a policy development process and have the board approve this, is something that was mentioned in the comments we've received that were requesting some form of ability for instance, if the GNSO requires a decision for a policy action after a PDP from the board, the approval of the PDP or should not be subject to a community IRP unless the GNSO is part of the supporting SO or ACs supporting the community IRP process. So I think with the carve-out that is being considered, mentioned by the registry stakeholder group, for instance, we could address the board's concern regarding the threshold. And so if we had the carve-out similar to what we did for in previous cases, then we could leave as is the threshold at 3 SO and ACs, and that would still address the board concern. So I think we that may be a way forward, and I wanted to offer this suggestion. Thank you.
Thanks, Mathieu. I guess that's a very wise suggestion that you're making. Having understood better the rationale from the board leads to the conclusion that there's the fear that that some parts of the community might go against other parts of the community to negatively impact what's on their turf. And therefore, B seems to be a solution that is more appropriate, more targeted, and maybe less invasive than working on the thresholds entirely. I see that there are no other hands up from participants or attendees of this call. Can we hear from Bruce or another board member whether this suggested way forward is acceptable to the board?
Yeah, I think if you have an appropriate carve-out around that, I believe so, yes. I mean, we'll need to see the sort of final text, but we're just sort of making sure that... so if I understand correctly, you're suggesting you want to have a minimum of three to initiate a community IRP, but you're also putting in a carve-out regarding policy development from one of the SOs, essentially.
That's the idea. So I suggest, and Matthew has also asked for concrete language, let's try to work on language for the carve-out and review that language on the list. But I think that that it's good and encouraging to hear that we seem to have a way forward on this. And let me just check whether there are any volunteers for coming up with a draft for this. I think that Becky, maybe you as rapporteur, are an appropriate person to come up with a suggestion for this. Is that acceptable to you?
Yes, sir.
Excellent. So let's mark that as
if anybody else wants to participate in developing with ME, I'd be very happy to have colleagues.
Excellent. And let's also put on the audio recording that Shireen has also supported the idea of a carve-out, and David is offering help to you, Becky, so that's excellent. Let's continue the conversation on this way forward with respect to points A and B. And Becky, would you like to speak to C with respect to recommendation 7 so that we can also agree on a way forward on that point?
Yes. So the board raised concerns about use of the IRP to resolve issues with expert panels. I think that I think we agree that if an expert panel makes a decision that causes ICANN to act in a manner that is inconsistent with its bylaws or exceeds its mission, that is clearly fair game for the independent review panel. That leaves us with the question of whether we would want the IRP, which is designed to be a constitutional court with limited mandate, to sort of resolve inconsistent outcomes and the like. And I think that we really haven't had that much discussion in the comment periods on this one provision that has been in there that sort of contemplated allowing the IRP to resolve these decisions. Clearly, we have learned that the policy development processes that employ expert decision-making bodies need to contemplate how to resolve the variations in decisions that produce uneven effects across the, in the case of the new GTLDs, across the applicant pool and across, the effects on the community. But perhaps, and I think this is what the board is saying, that it's really something that should be addressed through the PDP, and a constitutional court like the IRP should be really limited to addressing failures of those expert panels that take ICANN outside of or in conflict with its mission. Anybody from the board who wants to elaborate on that is welcome to do so.
And also others on this call, if you have comments on this, please do put yourself in the queue. So Bruce, maybe we can call on you as a board liaison.
I'll try. So this is the question about whether the IRP should be on expert panels. I thought we covered that in the last call.
Thank you.
I don't recall covering it on the last call, but I do think that we did clearly raise that as a discussion point. I mean, it doesn't seem to me that there is a strong pushback one way or another, and I cannot say that there was strong feeling about the provision or that we really got much by way of comment over our three comment periods on this one particular function. We certainly did design the IRP to be a limited function constitutional court, and so the board's comment is not inconsistent with that, so long as we, I think, agree, to the extent those expert panels move us into territory that's in conflict with or the decisions essentially amount to causing ICANN to act in a way that violates its bylaws, that is still covered here. I see we have a hand.
I think our principle here is that the IRP should be used for violations of the bylaws or articles of incorporation. And what we didn't want to do is get into people making decisions about, really the opinions of an expert panel. But as I think we discussed a couple of days ago, we were talking around this topic, Becky, and saying there's a set of procedures that a panel must follow, and they need to. And those procedures would be public and available to challenge that those procedures are consistent with the bylaws. I think what you're talking about is a scenario where the panel effectively goes outside of those procedures and does something that's not consistent with those procedures, that's usually picked up in reconsideration. And then I guess what you're saying is if the board didn't fail to take into account the fact that a panel wasn't following its processes, then the board's decision in that area could be challenged. But really we think the IAP should be focused on the board's decision making and whether it's consistent with the articles of incorporation. And the expert panels should generally be dealt with through an appeals process that relates to the topic in which that expert panel is related. So that's the thing that was missing from the new GTLD process. We had no ability to appeal a panel decision directly.
I think we're in agreement.
Okay, let's move to Alan, and then let's try to move to the separation process. Alan?
Okay, thank you. Very quickly, this whole item on panel decisions was added because the ALAC brought it up. Becky's solution a few weeks ago had said that if in some future policy we ever want the IRP to be used to arbitrate between conflicting panel decisions, the policy should be explicit as to say what kind of action the IRP can take. What the board is proposing is roughly equivalent. That is, any future policy that has panels must allow for conflicting decisions, and how do we handle it? I think all of these are roughly equivalent, and I'm happy with where we're going. Thank you.
That's excellent. So we seem to be having a way forward on this. Let's then move to item number two, the separation process. And Becky, would you like to speak to that briefly?
Yeah, I think that these are not controversial. They are clarifications that we need to make to meet the CWG dependencies, as I understand them. So they have asked for... CWG has asked for the right to reject board decisions relating to reviews of IANA functions and an unlimited number of times. And the bylaws drafting review process and separation process will continue to include involvement by the CWG stewardship. Neither of those are controversial, so I'm prepared to accept them. Any exceptions or objections to that? And then the ICANN board has suggested clarification that the separation of process applies to domain name management function to IANA only. I think if that is not clear, it should be clear because that is what the separation process relates to. Again, I don't see that as controversial, and I defer to anybody who wants to raise that as a point of contention.
Thanks, Becky. So let's just confirm with the group whether there are objections and confirmation we're doing by asking for objections or concerns with this. There seems to be silence on the list on this point, which is good, and that allows us to move forward and have a 10-minute break now. Thanks very much, Becky, for the excellent overview. Thanks to the whole group for, including the board, for making good progress on this. So we seem to have a way forward. The language on the carve-out is going to be circulated on the list. But as always, you will also find a high-level summary of our outcome. I think it's going to be sent within the next couple of hours. Let's now do a 10-minute break and reconvene at 7:40 UTC.
Hello, everyone. This is Neil Sanchez. Can we please have the recording started again?
Recordings are started.
Thank you very much. So we hope you have enjoyed your 10-minute break, and we're back for the remainder of our call. And for the next agenda item, we have a recommendation 5, and we would like to provide you with an update on the ongoing discussions. As you might be aware, that there has been a large discussion in the list about the mission statement, especially in regard to consumer trust. But I would like to ask Becky if she could provide us with an update. And I do believe that we have a couple of slides for displaying, which are already in your screens. So, Becky, would you like to take the floor?
Thank you, Leon. Yes, so before we go into the update, there are some specific provisions that I'm hoping that we can deal with. The first is that you will recall working with the numbers community, we developed language that suggested that ICANN's role with respect to numbers in carrying out its stability and security mission was to coordinate the allocation of the assignment at the top level of Internet Protocol and Autonomous System numbers as described in the ASO MOU. The ICANN board has proposed an alternative formulation of that and included, it is eliminated, it's talked about role as opposed to mission, so this is consistent with its kind of scoping language, which I think doesn't substantively or materially change things, but it has added a substantive role of ratifying at the global level policies developed that are reasonably and appropriate related to these IP and AS numbers, which I believe is consistent with the MOU, but this does create one issue, which is that it creates, as a fundamental bylaw, a role that cannot be changed readily, whereas the MOU between ICANN and the RARs provides for an alternative mechanism for changing this. So we get into a little bit of a disconnect between the MOU provisions relating to how things are changed and the fundamental bylaws. And I see Izumi has raised her hand, so she's the perfect person to help us understand this change and the implications for the RIRs.
Thanks, Vicky. I see Izumi's hand is up. Izumi, could you please see me for?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Izumi.
Okay, great. So,
thank you. We have a little bit of echo at some point, so if you are not speaking, please mute your microphone. And Izumi, if you could speak up a little bit, please, because we can hear you, but very, very faint. So it would be appreciated if you could speak up a little bit.
I'll try again. Is this any better?
I believe it is. But still, some people aren't able to listen to you. So So I guess maybe if you go closer to the microphone.
Yes. Maybe I'll speak louder. I think
that works.
We had discussions online with Bruce Tonkin, and we have explained that we still feel it's important we keep this reference to the ASO MOU, given that we are clearly defining ICANN's role in related to the number of resources based on agreement between both ICANN and the RIRs. And I recall response from Bruce was that the board is okay to leave this reference. So given that if there are no further concerns from ICANN board in keeping reference to the ASO MOU document, our strong preference is to keep this language, the original language, in the third proposal of the CCWG.
Thank you very much, Izumi. Bruce, I see your hand is up. Could you please take the floor?
Yeah, thanks, Leon. I think one of our comments here, too, was you know, as much as possible, we want the bylaws to be self-contained so you can see the text. And this might just end up being a drafting thing. So I think the correspondence I had with Izumi here is I don't think it's a deal-breaker. Yeah, if that's absolutely critical to describe it in that way with the ASO MOU. The alternative, maybe there's a paragraph from the ASO MOU which would be appropriate to insert here. So it's the same, whatever the paragraph is in the ASO MOU that describes ICANN's mission in this regard, that might be better. Because then when you go and read the bylaws, you can see the relevant text. You're not having to rely on linking to another document, but if it's possible. But that could be something that the lawyers look at when we're doing the drafting.
Thank you very much, Bruce. So I see that we still need to iron out a couple of details here, so I would like to ask the board if they could reach out to the ASO and maybe come back with a proposal if need be. So I guess that will be the way forward. And I would now turn back to Becky for the next issue. Becky?
Okay, if we could have the next slide, I guess I can move this. Yes. With respect to RSEC, we have had language that has been essentially a placeholder for the language regarding root servers. The current bylaws language says that with respect to root servers, ICANN's role is to coordinate the operation evolution of the DNS root name server system. RSEC has come back and proposed that it ICANN's role is to facilitate coordination of the operation and evolution of the DNS root name server system. And ICANN board has come back with a rather different language, specifically citing an operational role as well as consideration of input from the communities dependent on a root server system. Bruce's hand is up. I think it's from the last time, but I wouldn't mind having a little more from the board on this operational role, because that certainly is not reflected in the comments of RSEC.
Thank you very much, Becky. Are there any comments from the board in regard to this difference in appreciations between what the RSEC proposed and the actual board proposal?
So what was, oh, okay, that's what you're getting there from RSAC there in the text.
Right. What we got is that they just wanted that rather than the language that says coordinates the operation, that ICANN's role is to facilitate coordination of the operation.
Yeah, I think we support. So just to be clear, that wasn't in the third draft proposal, was it? That's
correct.
New text.
Yes.
Correct. So we support that text there from RSAC. Just trying to see if there's anything else that's meaningful there.
Well, the question is whether you require the language regarding the operational role.
Coordinates the operation of the DNS phone, facilitates coordination of. Oh, look, I have to take it back. I think, Becky, we haven't discussed that change, but certainly the shift from coordinate to facilitates coordination, we would support that advice from RSAC. I think this is really just as clarity as anything else that as well as doing coordination, we actually have an operational role with respect to the root zone. So facilitates coordination of the operation. Becky, I think the general theme, and this is probably coming from staff as much as anything else, is just not to preclude what we're already doing. So the role that we perform with respect to the root name server system, we have an operational role. One of the things we do, for example, is operate the LRoot server, for example. So we actually operate part of the root name server system as well as facilitate coordination of. But maybe if I put it back on you, what's your concern with the language? I suppose I don't understand your concern with the board's proposal, which is really just to state what we're doing.
In truth, I don't actually have a concern about it. An operational role to the extent that, you know, it's referring to. The algorithm is certainly sensible. I just think we need, a sort of direct board RSAC. Somehow we need to just get you guys on the same page.
Yeah, so the intent of our language there is basically just to, if we accept the change to the first sentence, I think that's fine. And then the other thing is we just want to make clear that as well as facilitating, we actually have an operational role in the root name server system as well. So it's in addition to that, and LRoot's an example of that.
Okay. So I think we just need to circle back to RSAC.
Exactly. So I would suggest that with the previous item, that the board would kindly reach out to RSAC and then come back with a proposal.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Bruce. And back to Becky for next issue on mission to the update of where are we standing with the discussion on other items. So, Becky.
Okay, thank you. So I think everybody's aware we have had a very, very robust discussion on the list about the language regarding consumer trust. I think that, although the conversation has been heated, I think that there are two quite strongly held positions. I think everybody agrees that the affirmation of commitment creates some obligations related to consumer trust, specifically in the context of new GTLD expansion, and that that provision is being carried over into the review section of the bylaws. For a significant portion of the community, that faithfully transposes the bylaw, that AOC obligations with respect to consumer trust. There are others who feel strongly that the affirmation of commitments contains a commitment by ICANN with respect to a general role in promoting consumer trust in the DNS marketplace. That portion of the community is advocating for a reference to consumer trust in the commitments and core values portion of Article 1 of the bylaws. For those who believe that the AOC obligation is limited to GTLD expansion, alternate view creates significant concerns about expansion of the scope of ICANN's role, raises questions, for example, about, you know, what the DNS marketplace is. Surely it includes CCPLDs. Probably it could be read to include a lot of other things. I think, frankly, that we have a real impasse on this, and I think that it is an impasse that goes to sort of very, you know, fundamental aspects. I frankly don't see a way forward at this point, and I'm conscious of the fact that, you know, we have not had substantive discussions other than in the, you know, in the past week or two on this point. My proposal would be that we agree to proceed with the language regarding the reviews that everybody agrees is in scope, and that we put the more general consumer trust issue into Workstream 2 for further discussion. And I'm sure that there are people who disagree with that approach.
Thank you very much, Vicky. So I would like to now open the floor for comments, and I see Avery Doria's hand is up. Avery?
Hi, thank you. This is Avery speaking. Yeah, I'm one that does not agree with the proposal to push that off to Workstream 2. I think part of getting the AOC into the into Workstream 1 includes dealing with that issue. One way forward that I'm suggesting the impasse is to go back to the people both within ICANN and from within NTIA who actually produced this agreement and find out what the intention was. We are disagreeing on an interpretation based on our view of the intention of those that wrote it. Some of us read the intention that all the words there are applicable and that the words in three are not just devoid of content and a chapeau. Others read it as a chapeau. That is something that, at least in terms of moving forward with this dialogue, it might be helpful to go back to the original source and see whether they can give us any assistance in coming to closure on it. So that's one thing I would suggest. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Aubrey. Next on the queue, I have Alan Greenberg.
Thank you very much. Some of us a very long time ago said we should not try to tackle the AOC in this process, that it didn't really need to be done. But we decided to go ahead, and we decided that we would incorporate the AOC into the bylaws without particularly saying which section is which. We have a problem here in that much of what was in the AOC is already in the bylaws, and so that wasn't a challenge. Here we have something that was not. And I think it's really important to look at the AOC
paragraph, because this the group as a whole has not really looked at it, and I've just posted it into the chat. The contention is that the item on consumer trust, and it is 3C of the AOC, is a chapeau leading into the reviews, the consumer trust review. But if you look at section number 3, there's an A, B, C, and D. A is talking about it's going to be hard to read because it's moving at this point. The technical coordination of the DNS and public interest, accountability and transparency. That's certainly not talking just about the new GTLDs. Preserve the security, stability, and resiliency of the DNS. That's not talking about new GTLDs. Promote competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice in the marketplace is claimed to be just the new GTLDs, and then facilitate international participation in the DNS technical communication is certainly not new GTLDs. So the claim is being made is that this section is just referring to the new GTLDs, where this, the vast majority of it clearly has a general applicability. And the ALAC feels strongly that this is something that is generally applicable, not just to the new GTLDs. The term consumer trust, along with stability, security of the DNS, is within the mission of contractual compliance. If we're claiming that consumer trust is not really part of what ICANN should be doing, and one of our commitments, then one could, in theory, file an IRP saying compliance shouldn't be looking at consumer trust. And yet, that's a large reason of why they're there, to make sure that people have confidence in the DNS. So it seems obvious to us, at least, that this is a general statement, and if we are making the decision, which we have made, to move the AOC into the bylaws, then we have to do it. You can't walk away from the AOC with a significant item in the middle of the AOC just sitting out in no man's land, in never-never land. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that, Alan. Next on the queue, I have someone's book.
Thanks very much, Leon. The point that I'm going to make is this. We have considerable discussion on what and what not to include. We have considerable discussion on what is meant by consumer trust, defining it. We have considerable discussions about what the DNS marketplace is. We have concerns raised by the CCTLDs in particular, but also there are concerns to what extent these tasks, if you wish, or these provisions in the AOC only relate to new GTLDs versus legacy TLDs. And all this leads to the conclusion, at least for me, that we're trying to discuss a much broader issue than what was originally in the AOC. And I think there are two component parts to this, one of which is the AOC, the review section. We have that in our report, and therefore nothing is swept under the carpet. But with respect to what exactly is meant by DNS marketplace, consumer trust, et cetera, I think that's a discussion that goes beyond a verbatim translation of the AOC into the bylaws, and therefore deserves further discussion in Workstream 2. So I would really urge that we make this demarcation between the reviews and what should potentially go into the bylaws at a later stage, and that is something we should be looking into in Workstream number 2.
Thank you very much for this, Thomas. Next on the queue, I have Andrew Sullivan, but suddenly disappeared. Andrew, did your hand go accidentally down, or did you put it down?
No, I agreed with all that went before, so I decided to shut up.
Okay, thank you very much, Andrew. Next on the queue is Becky Burr.
So I'm very confused. No one has ever said that Section 3 of the affirmation of commitments applies exclusively to new GTLDs. What I have consistently said, and what I frankly think is the only sensible application of textual reading rules is that, like paragraph 1 and paragraph 2, paragraph 3 is an introductory text. The provisions of paragraph 3, A, B, C, and D directly directly link to specific commitments that ICANN has taken on in 7, 8, and 9. And paragraph 3C maps directly to 9C, I believe, or which talks about expansion of the new GTLD space and the need to consider consumer trust issues in the context of expansion of the TLD space, new GTLD space, and calls for very specific reviews with respect to that. So, I Alan's read that says I've tried to say that 3C is only about. That 3 altogether is only about new GTLDs is not correct. What I have said is it is Chapeau introductory text. It talks about affirming commitments of the Commerce Department and ICANN, and then the text structurally goes on to specifically call out what those commitments are with respect to the DOC on the one hand and the and ICANN on the other. I think that we have transposed the commitment that is referenced in 3C, and that is articulated in 9. We have transposed that into the bylaws. To do anything else either creates a bizarre situation where we're talking about very specific functions in the commitments and core values that are limited, that we stretch the concept of consumer trust and the affirmation of commitments in a way that will personally be unacceptable to a significant part of this community.
Thank you very much, Becky. Next on the queue, I have Malcolm Hardy.
Thank you. I went in the queue before Thomas Rickett spoke. He basically said everything that I wanted to say, so I just wanted to voice agreement and support for what he said. That's all.
Thank you very much, Malcolm. Next is Alan Greenberg.
Thank you. First, I apologize for misquoting Becky. The point I was trying to make is there are items in Section 3 which are not just related to reviews, and that is, I believe, an important aspect. The commitment is to consumer trust in the DNS marketplace. I admit a bad phrase. Certainly, I take that to mean in the GTLD space. There's no one who is going to claim that we're responsible for consumer trust issues in the CCTLD space, and I don't think anyone would claim that. My concern, I'll be very blunt, is if we push this into Workstream 2, we are going to require a change to a fundamental bylaw, and I don't think there are enough people who do not want to see ICANN doing consumer trust issues at all, who do not agree with the current contractual compliance mission, that I believe that will virtually make sure that it will never happen. And I really worry that someone can then claim that contractual compliance is in violation of the bylaws. And I think we have a real problem if we go that way. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alan. Next on the queue, I have Keith Dulbienko.
Thanks, Leon. I've always been a big proponent of having ICANN compliance step up to the plate and enforce ICANN's commitments and contracts. And I'm a huge supporter of the work we're doing in the affirmation of commitments review of consumer trust, consumer choice, and competition, and then the expansion. So having said that, Now that you have the affirmation in front of you, you can all see paragraph 3 on the screen. And the point we were making, and that I made on list earlier today, is that I do believe this is, as the attorneys call it, a chapeau to the reviews themselves. And the reason for that is simple. If you read paragraph 3A, that maps exactly to the review down below on 9.1, the ATRTU, or Accountability and Transparency Review. 3B maps exactly to the second review, the review of security, stability, and resiliency. And 3C maps exactly to the review of the GTLD expansion in 9.3. So, I mean, we can confirm by asking the ICANN folks who helped to draft the affirmation. We can talk to the NTIA folks who drafted it. But it seems fairly obvious that 3A, B, and C are a chapeau for the reviews, 9.1.9.2 and 9.3, which appear a page below in the same document itself. So I don't think it's appropriate to read 3C as something brand new that applies to all TLDs, both legacy and CCs. Oh, I wish it were so, but I don't think it does. And that is why there's an attempt here to put it into Workstream 2, I guess, to do further clarity. And that's really a courtesy to those who want a more expansive read of this than it is a reflection of a likelihood that something would change in Workstream 2. But I think a comparison of paragraph 3 on the screen in front of you with 9.1, 9.2, and 9.3, I think makes this a pretty close case. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Steve. And next on the queue, I have Thomas Rucker.
Thanks very much, Leon. And I think that a lot of good points have been made, and I also understand the why concerns are being raised by some of you. But let me try to take this back to a merely procedural aspect on how we approach things. Let's try to remember the Workstream 1 versus Workstream 2 definitions. And we have spent a lot of time, we've undergone various public comment periods to specify what needs to be done in Workstream 1 versus Workstream 2. We have the AOC issues, the AOC points on our list for Workstream 1. And that's going into the review section of our report, primarily, when it comes to the discussion here. What we're trying to do here is actually go beyond what is explicitly in the AOC. And we see a lot of uncertainty with definitions, with applicability, with the applicability for CCs, for legacy GTLDs and new GTLDs and all that. And that is going beyond what we had agreed to be in Workstream 1 with the community's support. And therefore, I think it would be an entire game changer if we wanted to add components to Workstream 1. Remember that we agreed we wanted to be conservative with Workstream 1 tasks because Workstream 1 only asks us to do those things that need to be in place or committed to prior to the transition. This needs more work. The work should be done. This topic should not be suppressed. But I urge all of us to accept that we have done what we are tasked to do, what we've committed to with respect to the AOC, based on what we have in Workstream 1 now, and we should just add these additional components to consumer trust and the DNS marketplace to Workstream number 2.
Thank you very much, Thomas. So if I'm hearing well, the proposed way forward would be to actually incorporate this, the AOC into the bylaws as they stand today, but to undertake a deeper look at the consumer trust issue in Workstream 1 as to whether the review needs to expand its scope to other GTLDs other than new GTLDs, or whether it should remain as it stands in the current AOCs.
And I see Andrew Sullivan's hand is up. Andrew, could you please take the floor?
Thank you. So maybe I can ask those who think that that this is not an expansion of scope, or who want to clarify with the people who wrote this, what they will do if the answer comes back either, oh, yes, we thought that what this meant was that ICANN has responsibility for all of the names in the entire DNS, or if it came back and said, well, we didn't mean it that way. We just meant this to apply to gTLDs or all TLDs or whatever, because both of those outcomes mean in any case that this language can't possibly be in use. Because in the first case, what will happen is there'll be a revolt and the DNS will become, you know, unusable essentially overnight. And in the second case, the language has to be rewritten. So I guess I don't understand even if the expansive interpretation is the right one, or is the one that people intended or something, I don't understand how we can proceed with that. It doesn't seem to me to ramify. And so I'd like to understand how people would proceed under those cases if we actually went and did the clarification, which I have to say I don't really support, since, of course, we'd just be asking people to clarify what they meant some years ago. And it's not always clear that people know what they meant some years ago. But supposing we came up with that, I'd like to know what people would do.
Thank you very much, Andrew. Anyone willing to follow up on Andrew's request? Okay, so I see Alan and Avery. So Alan is first on the queue.
Thank you. I'm not going to answer Andrew's question because I didn't propose that we ask those people. I believe the words stand for themselves right now. The original text in Proposal 1 did not use the term DNS marketplace, I believe. It just used the reference that we have a responsibility to think about consumer trust. And that was all I had ever advocated. I agree completely with Andrew that term is a loaded term that we would not want to go anywhere near. But the concept that ICANN has a responsibility, not the sole responsibility, we believe is an important one. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ellen. Next, I have Avery.
Hi, this is Avery speaking. I'm fine with the question. I'm the one that, proposed it as a way beyond the impasse. I, too, think the wording is completely clear. I just disagree with Andrew and others about what it clearly says. I think that if the answer were to come back that, no, we had been thinking this as either pertaining to, all that ICANN does, or pertains to all gTLDs, or didn't, then we would include consumer trust in one, as has been argued. Now, I don't think of it as a loaded term, as I've argued on the list. I think if you really want to get into analyzing all the terms here, we will have problems agreeing with promote, competition, and such. All those terms are loaded to some sense and would book great argument. If, on the hand, they come back and say, no, it was just a chapeau, and we never meant for it to refer to anything more than new gTLDs, my proposal would be that we do not, therefore, include any change in one, and we stick with the AOC as currently included. At the moment, I think that's partial inclusion, and I would like to see a complete inclusion. But if the answer comes back that, no, we are misreading it, and those who say it is clearly only about new gTLDs, not existing gTLDs, not the general scope of ICANN's mission with regard to the DNS marketplace, then, it becomes easier to settle as opposed to being in a situation where one side or the other has to agree that, no, I will surrender, I will accept your interpretation. And I personally think that it is obvious that it does go beyond the new GTLDs, but I'm willing to go back to first references and use that as a determinant. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Avery. And I would say that, okay, so I see Thomas' hand is up. Thomas, could you please take the floor?
Thanks very much, Leon. I think that Avery has offered an excellent opportunity for us to take this discussion further. Let's try to get an answer from NTIA with respect to whether it was meant to be chapeau language or not, and maybe that resolves the issue for us. And I would suggest that we pause our conversation on this during this call until we get confirmation or a response from NTIA on that aspect. Certainly, we can continue the discussion on the list. As said previously, regardless of the outcome, the discussion is not going to disappear, so we can gladly have it in Workstream 2, but I think that it's going to greatly help with this if we get feedback from NTIA. So I suggest that we take stock in that way and that we're going to reach out to NTIA and report feedback to the whole group.
Thank you very much for this, Thomas, and I have nothing to add to this conclusion. I would just like to correct the notes, since we have a conclusion there that it says that incorporating the bylaws as it stands today and undertake deeper look in Workstream 2. And since we are holding this issue pending NTIA response, I would then correct the conclusions for these part of our call. And I see Malcolm Huddy's hand is up. Malcolm?
So just a quick check on the way the action's being recorded. Are we looking to get an answer from the NTIA on whether it was meant to be a chapeau or just a view? As in, are we delegating to the NTIA the task of deciding this for us, or are we merely asking for their input?
We would be asking for their input, Malcolm, and see what they come up.
In that case, can we please have the action clarified so that that's clear in the action item as it's recorded?
Yes, we will ask that to clarify.
Thank you.
Okay, so are there any other comments at this point on this issue? Becky, would you like to add something? Okay.
No, I think we're fine.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Becky. So this concludes this part of our call, and I'd like to turn back to my co-chair, Thomas, for any other business. Thomas?
We would like to hear whether there's any other business that we need to deal with today. There don't seem to be any hands up. So with that, we can conclude and end this call early. Thanks, everyone. This has been an extremely fruitful discussion. We will send high-level summaries to the list for further discussion soon, and we're going to continue our conversation on the list and during the next call. Thanks, everyone, and bye for now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, all. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.